And welcome back. This week you're still jamming out.
I'm still jamming out.
You're still jamming out.
I love
out.
That song. That's your friend's band, isn't it?
It is my friend's band, yeah.
And their name is?
OPC. They are no longer in existence, yeah.
Is there any marketplace?
I don't know, maybe. I'll have to check, yeah.
Anyway,
it's my friend's band.
Hello, I'm Dan Fernandez.
No, you're not. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Nick Fillingham.
Nick Fillingham. So this is This Week on Channel 9, and Nick, we've worked together for a couple of years. I didn't know until today your name was NIC.
You're actually not very good at reading, are you?
No, I've been calling you Nick with a K this entire time, and you haven't corrected me.
Funny little thing that Nick with a K and Nick without a K actually pronounce the same.
I beg to differ with
okay.
that. But,
unless you like to call me Nice. Is that what you're going at? What are you going for? Like, how would you pronounce Nick without a K? How's it change?
Well, it's Nick. As
okay.
opposed to Nick.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So you're talking like one of the umlauts on the I or something
like
that.
Yeah,
we're talking about
exactly.
It's a vowel inflection. I got it. Yeah,
anyway,
it's confusing. I'm sorry.
Anyway, on the air, apology.
Oh,
here,
look, so. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Windows Phone SDK 7.1 release candidate.
Yes.
Yes.
So excellent.
It's out now. This release candidate will now allow you to use a Go Live license and actually publish your applications to the Windows Phone Marketplace for Mango. So they started taking the Windows Phone Mango Marketplace applications this week. Doesn't mean that they're available to customers yet, mm-hmm. but there, of course, is a pipeline and a process to go through to get them into the marketplace, and so you can start loading up the marketplace with your application submissions.
Take a deep breath. And as with last week, I'll be playing the village idiot and asking stupid questions.
Right.
And
yes.
My question for you is that why is this the Windows Phone SDK 7.1 and not 7.5? Isn't Mango Windows Phone OS 7.5? Shouldn't this be Windows Phone SDK, or is this version 7.1 of the SDK?
That's a really good question that I haven't thought about. I wonder if they thought about that.
I don't know.
Stop the presses.
Stop the presses.
That's really kind of weird.
You heard it here first. We break all the big news.
We do.
All right.
Absolutely.
Next. Phone test project template.
That's right. So by default, you don't get a lot of support for writing automated tests for your Windows Phone 7.1 or 7.0 applications. And so this phone test project template from Jake Genovan, hope I'm saying that right, makes it easier for you to do that. He automatically grabs all the bindings that you need and adds references to a bunch of abstractions that make it easier to write unit tests and other types of automated tests to make sure that your Windows Phone applications are working correctly.
Now, in the testing, when you go about testing an app for a phone,
mm-hmm.
does this come before or after user testing? So at what point am I actually putting the app in my friend's hands and saying, hey, play with my app for the week and let me know
sure.
what happens?
Well, I mean, generally, in the world of testing, there's two types of testing. There's manual testing
uh-huh.
and there's automated testing.
Sure.
And with manual testing, that's actually where most of the testing starts, I would imagine. You start well, for most developers, there's TDD people, test-driven development people that would disagree.
Right.
But in practice...
I don't watch this show. We don't want to.
Right. Most people don't... they don't start testing until they actually have the prototype of their application they can start playing with. Maybe it's their friends. Maybe it's them. And then the idea is that a lot of the time, as your application code base becomes more and more mature, you start writing tests that can automatically tell you whether or not you've regressed certain functionality. So once you get a piece of functionality into the state that it's working, you write a test, and then if it regresses that functionality, then you can find out about it automatically just by running it in Visual Studio or an automated overnight build or something like that. So this is focused on that automated test experience.
Right.
So, yeah.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you answered my question, but that was very helpful.
What was your question?
I just wonder if it came before or after the manual in-hand testing. At what point do I get to play with your app? After you've used this project test template?
Oh, well, you don't have
before?
To use this, but if you want to try to catch bugs automatically and quickly as you're making changes to the code, then automated tests are a good way to do that. But you're certainly not required to do this prior to handing it off to me for manual testing.
Excellent. Next.
Yes. Revisiting Windows Phone 7 text blocks and button controls. So
this sounds like a good post for me because being the village idiot, it sounds like that. And who's this by? This is Jake again.
No, this is not Jake. I just haven't advanced the slide. This is by Nick with a K, Nick Randolph, who spells his name correctly.
Yes, and you find that's pronounced Nick as opposed
to
Nick.
This guy is Nick.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
he's going back to basics here, and he's saying, here are some simple features that perhaps you don't know all the ins and outs of.
Not just for village idiots like you, but it's people that are, maybe you've been using these controls for a while, and you're not aware of all the different ways that you can style those controls, all the different properties. And so he's going back in this post, I think it's actually going to be a series of posts, and looking at those types of controls and kind of getting back to the basics of that.
Excellent.
So that's why I like this post.
Great.
Yeah.
Next.
So now that there are two marketplaces out there, there's the Mango marketplace and kind of the Windows Phone 7.0 point something, I guess it would be
Nodo.
Nodo, right, would be what most of us have on our phones. You have to start thinking about the fact that you've got applications which now need to be published for both worlds. And so until everybody has Mango, and I don't know how long that's going to take,
right,
until they do, you have to make sure that your applications can continue to compile. And if you're going to add a new feature, you need to add it across both these projects. And so this is also another post from Jake Ginnivan and Sean Wildermuth, who's pretty popular on the .NET.
Friends of the show.
Yes, absolutely. And so they're talking about two different approaches for being able to achieve that, where you can maintain some common business logic across both of the project types, and then you fork the projects based on the specific things you need to do either for Mango or for Nodo to account for changes or new functionality.
Now, when you say there's two marketplaces, is it literally two independent marketplaces, or is it more that if I've got a Mango device, the marketplace that I go to is showing me a selection of Mango-related apps or apps with Mango features as well,
right,
as everything underneath?
Another excellent question. I have not submitted to the Mango marketplace yet, so I'm not sure how it manifests itself, but maybe one of our viewers can come back and tell us, because I would imagine that you would either upload an application and tick the boxes to say which one it's tested in and what
sure.
the binaries are for, or there's actually two different marketplaces. So I'm not sure. That's a really good question.
I'd love for future versions of the OS to also use the fruit code name convention, so that 10 years from now we're in the dragon fruit or some kind of really mangosteen, something very very obscure.
Yeah,
moving right along.
Jicama. I like jicama.
Jicama.
I don't know if that's a fruit or a
vegetable. Isn't that a town like 3 hours east of Seattle?
Probably, yeah. There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're plugging. We're plugging Inside Windows Phone. Is that what we're doing here?
Yes, this is Inside Windows Phone. So this is a show that Jaime Rodriguez and Larry Lieberman did this past week, and the show is focused on getting ready for Mango. So they probably address these types of questions that you can bring
up. I really
should
have asked them these questions.
Yeah, you
really
should
have. You're
the
wrong person when you're talking to. I say that a lot.
I am a vacuum of information, yes. That's correct. So anyway, that's where you should get your actual news from Mango. And I think that's the last Windows Phone story we have for this show, which is a good thing, because I've exhausted my knowledge at this point.
All right. Moving along, it's the Bing Translator .NET extension methods.
That's right. So you're familiar with Bing?
I am familiar with Bing.
Okay.
I believe it is some kind of website.
Yeah, just Google for it. You'll find it.
With a photo that changes every day.
That's pretty much what it is.
That's what my mother tells me.
Yeah, exactly. They have a Bing translation service.
Uh-huh. Used to be called Windows Live Translator.
That's right.
Correct?
Before that, I think it was MSN Translator. So yeah,
okay.
It's Bing Translate, translate.bing.com.
Yep.
And they have an API. So you can start taking advantage of Bing translations within your applications. Maybe you want to translate your web page, or you want to make sure that any of the languages that are supported for your Windows Phone application, people can translate the UI, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
Well,
or even just make a really simple translation app.
Sure.
Block of text, translate to something else.
Definitely. Well, Google actually recently shut down their APIs for Google Translate.
Bum, bum,
so
bum.
That's creating a little bit of consternation. There's a number of other APIs they shut off as well. But Bing is alive and well. And so this is a set of an extension methods, meaning you can download the Bing Translate SDK,
okay,
and get a set of methods and APIs, and you can download these extension methods, which came from our friend Mohamed Saleh in the community.
Okay.
I hope I'm saying that name right. And and then he's added a number of other things that he's found are helpful.
So they sit on top of the API.
Yeah, sure.
So it's extended functionality.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. And it looks, it just kind of fits right in with the API, so you don't have to know about another set of libraries when you're, as you can see in the screenshot here, when you're actually using the IntelliSense to get the drop down on all the different methods that are there in the Microsoft version, then you'll just start seeing his additional methods there as well, which is really cool.
And again, this is just help people in the community just creating stuff.
That's right.
To make life better for developers.
Isn't
that awesome?
Better. That is awesome.
That is fantastic. I don't think we call that out enough on This Week on Channel 9.
We should.
At least you don't.
You should
call it out more.
All right.
All right. I didn't mean that. That was a little bit more aggressive than I was going for, but whatever. Announcing the Big Maps WPF control.
Yeah, so speaking of binking.
We should noun that. That should be a word that we use.
We should. We got to get on Urban Dictionary.
Yes.
So it's all. Hopefully it's not on Urban Dictionary and we just said something terribly offensive already. That would be bad. We meant no offense to our spinking audience out there. So anyway, Bing Maps, back to the topic at hand. So
yes.
Bing Maps released a WPF control,
okay.
Meaning that if you have a WPF application, as I know you do, Nick Fillingham,
several,
then you can now take advantage of the Bing Maps control right within your WPF application.
Okay.
So it supports, you know, your typical road, aerial, hybrid, and pan and zoom.
And this is something that's been created officially by the Microsoft.
Yes, this is from the Microsoft team. What's also cool about this
version... Why am I seeing a Surface logo on the screen?
Yeah, I was just about to point that out, is it also is touch-enabled, so it works on Surface as well.
Ooh.
So if you have a WPF app for Surface, and you want to take advantage of mapping controls, you can do that.
What if you have a touch-enabled device, like one of those Dell monitors with the touch points and stuff?
I would imagine it would work. I haven't tried it.
Okay.
You'll have to build an application this weekend and get back to
I really, you know, we should do this, because I'm going to be on This Week on Channel 9 for the next few weeks. Maybe
should.
I should, have some kind of ongoing project.
That's what we said last week. How's that coming
did
along?
Did we say that?
We did say that.
Oh,
go back
crap.
And watch the
right.
show. You had the flu, though, so.
I did. I got home from This Week on Channel 9 last week. I crashed.
Yeah.
It exploded all over the walls.
It takes it out of me,
stuff.
Too. Yeah, you were splinking.
splinked all over the... Oh, no. Two tips for Team Foundation Server Power Tool. We got rid of this one, didn't we?
Yeah, well, we're going to cover it anyway.
We should cover it.
Your version of the PowerPoint.
I apologize, people. We're going to cover this in next week.
Yes,
anyway.
That's right. But anyway, a couple weeks ago,
very
we talked about the fact that the TFS Power Tools are coming, the August 2011 release. And so this is a series of articles that that actually goes through and talks specifically about these power tools. And so this was put together by Mike Fury, which is really cool. So it makes it easy for people to come up to speed. One of the ones that that I think people are especially going to like, you see on the left-hand side of the screen there, is rollback in the Team Foundation power tools. So previously, if you wanted to roll back, meaning, hey, I made a mistake or I want to go back to an earlier version, you had to drop to the command prompt. I know how much you hate dropping to the command prompt. So
the
this means that you don't have to do that anymore.
It's like the bus stop.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, when I said I thought we dropped this, we were going to consolidate this particular piece of news into another slide.
That's right.
So my bad in not updating the data.
Yeah.
You know what we should have done? We should have used the Office web apps to ensure that we had a consistent document across all of our machines. Oh, we did use that.
Oh, well, we should. Yeah.
And somehow you failed.
Yeah. Well, you didn't synchronize. Yeah.
That's true.
One of us didn't synchronize.
All right. Next story is XNA to Silver XNA.
Right. So we covered this a while ago. We covered the project itself. You can see the XNA starter kit, the side-scrolling game there. Now there's a series of walkthroughs, tutorials, if you will, that talk about the process for moving from XNA to this kind of Silver XNA thing. And this is actually kind of cool because if you start blending the power, it's not a lot of people talk about this, but if you start blending what's available in Silverlight and what's available in XNA, you kind of get the best of both worlds because with Silverlight, you get nice control toolkits, you get XAML, you get all this stuff. With XNA, you get the ability to do things like set up game loops and play sounds and a lot of stuff that you don't get as fine-grained control with over in the Silverlight world. But why not blend the two of them?
And the Silver XNA term is really just these particular articles. They're kind of using that colloquially. It's not actually a thing.
After the market thing. So you're not going to see Microsoft Silver XNA coming to a download center near you. But this is by Simon Jackson. I'm assuming he coined the term, and if not, it's just kind of one of those things in the community.
It's a great term, but just to point out, this is not something that Microsoft. It's not a new version. Not a
correct.
A middle ground that Microsoft has created.
That's right.
Very
cool. That's right.
Jumping ahead to the most useful keyboard shortcuts for .NET developers.
Yeah, I really like this one. We've covered keyboard shortcuts in the past for Visual Studio, and there's a lot of them. I mean, you could probably print two, front and back sides of paper. But what I like about this one is that he really takes a look not just at Visual Studio, but also ReSharper, which I would say, if not the majority, certainly a large percentage of Visual Studio users.
Village Idiot. Time. Tell me about ReSharper. What is a ReSharper?
Well, ReSharper gives you
in the photography world, if I'm adding an unsharp or a sharpening filter to an image, I'm actually trying to highlight contrast, highlight edges, make the image look more sharp.
Right.
But how does that relate in the world of code, world of development?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
Really?
Yeah,
it
doesn't.
Because it's not like I'm trying to find the angular parts or get better contrast. Is it about trying to make my code perhaps more readable? Is it to deobfuscate?
Actually, you're kind of getting there, because ReSharper actually contains a lot of what are called refactorings.
Okay.
And refactorings are a way to clean up and reorganize your code. So for example, a really basic refactoring is, you know, I'm using the same set of methods all over the place which do the same thing, right? Maybe I'm adding one to a variable name. That's a bad example, right? But consider something that you may do over and over again. Instead of having to go back and make a bug fix or an update to that section of code, but then have to remember to do it 300 times across your entire project, you can do what's called refactor that into its own method. That would be an encapsulate method refactoring. And then you can reference that from all over the place. And that way, if you need to make changes to the way that behaves, you just do it once, a bug fix or add a feature.
Okay.
ReSharper gives you a lot of those types of refactorings. Visual Studio has several, but ReSharper has a lot more.
Okay.
And it also has a lot of other additional kind of bells and whistles, and it's a good tool to add to Visual Studio.
And it's about making your life easier as a developer,
right,
as opposed to perhaps adding more functionality to the piece of software you're writing.
Exactly. Yes,
right.
It's all about developer productivity. Your end users would never see this.
Sure.
Yeah, and then of course Windows 7 as well has a lot of really nice hotkeys, and so he's added this in here. So it's kind of one of those things that's nice to print out, hang at your cubicle, and you're good to go.
This is just I think it's a PDF, isn't it, that you download and just print?
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
Yep. So SnippetDoc. So speaking of making your life easier as a Visual Studio developer, one of the things that we've supported, I think, since Visual Studio 2005 is the ability to do code snippets. And so if you find yourself using the same piece of code over and over and over again, you might want to create a snippet that you can then just quickly reference by typing
a comment that says, Dan, do not touch this following piece of code.
That's actually just a comment.
But what if you're constantly saying, comment, Dan, go away, don't touch this.
Yes, that's something.
It works, I know what I'm doing.
Exactly, that is a very valid snippet that you might want to reuse. Right now, there's not a really good way to look across your entire project structure or your Visual Studio settings to understand all those different code snippets. And so this is a nice little, it's called SnippetDoc. It's a nice little open source tool that makes it easy for you to do that and visualize it using a web view.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
So creating a podcast player with HTML5 for an IE9 pin site on Windows 7. Have you checked out Scott Hanselman's This Developer's Life?
I have.
It's really cool, isn't it?
It is great. Yeah.
Even if you're not a hardcore in the weeds developer, it's pretty cool look at like what happens as a developer and different stories of careers and
stuff. He's Hansel Pants is actually quite good at weaving in, you know, interesting parts of his
Hansel
life.
Pants,
oh,
nice.
I don't know why I said that. It's even for the village idiot like me, it's great.
Yeah, for sure.
It's cool.
And so
as is his blog. I mean, his blog's great. I always read his blog.
Exactly. So he actually, as part of publishing his podcast, he whipped together a quick HTML5 player for those podcasts. And he went one step further to actually talk about how he not only built the player but also integrated it with IE9 as a pinned site so that you can now right-click and then, you know, fast-forward, track-forward, all that kind of stuff.
Although I did see an interesting comment that he made on that particular post about how the fact that the industry hasn't really rallied around
the best HTML5
player. Yeah. And how it's interesting, like, he whipped one up very, very quickly.
Right.
But I think his comment was more that he didn't find one that had been adopted across lots and lots and lots of different sites.
Right, exactly.
Everyone was really just kind of doing their own thing or kind of, yeah.
Yep.
Which I think it's interesting, which shows, I suppose, HTML5 is still kind of new. It's still kind of in its infancy.
Sure.
Even though it's not really, but it kind of is.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
Cool.
So, pretty neat. And then speaking of IE9 pin sites, so this is just another post that's actually on Channel 9. It's a Channel 9 video talking to the guys over at Slacker.
Slacker.com.
Slacker, yeah, the Slacker, the radio, it's kind of like Pandora or, you know, what have you. I'm sure they would beg to differ. But this is how they
kind of, but better.
Yes, exactly. We love you
Almost.
Guys.
Similar,
right.
In the same vein, but substantially better.
Right, exactly. I totally agree. Yep. Couldn't.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
Slacker.com.
So they built an IE9 pin site as well.
Okay.
Which I don't know if Pandora has that, so maybe that's the key differentiator.
Yes. Although I think there's a widget.
There's a gadget.
A gadget. Widget, yes. I believe, is a Yahoo term.
Oh, yes, you're right.
But it's a gadget.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yep.
Moving right along. Oh, again, I think we covered this last week, didn't we?
No, we weren't going to cover this because it's not strictly a developer story. So this is another piece of bonus news.
Again, we have two different decks. What's happening here?
We do, because you didn't update yours at the same time I was updating mine.
That is
true. I didn't even think about it.
That is true.
I didn't think about it.
This is a cool video. It's just, let's try and blow up the laptop. Let's just kind of do let's cover it in sand. Let's get a horse to eat it and pass it through the justice system. And you can't destroy
it. It could happen. It could happen to your laptop. So you got to make sure that it's prepared. Next story.
Go check it out.
Yes. So Robert Greene hosting Visual Studio Toolbox, and this week he actually had Damian Edwards on. And so Damian's talking about a lot of the enhancements that are being made to JavaScript editing, specifically JScript editor extensions within Visual Studio.
I can't even think of a question to ask.
Yeah, it's that good.
You should go check it out.
Yes, definitely. This, you won't be able to think of a question.
No, I can. I do.
Yeah.
I have a question.
What's your question for this? Oh, well, let's first introduce the topic.
So this is another Charles highlight.
Charles' story. Charles spent 3 whole days and 2 evenings with the guys over at C++ and Beyond 2011. I guess it's a slumber party or a conference or something.
It was a slumber party in Banff.
Oh, in Banff.
Banff,
yeah.
I believe he was... go back to the camera so I need to do air quotes.
Oh, air quotes.
He was working.
Oh, right.
Working in Banff for several days.
Clearly.
And I have, you know, Charles actually shot all of these videos himself.
Really?
With a video camera.
Oh, wow.
And he even used microphones to collect the audio, which
is
just
first
amazing.
First class.
Yes. But and this is also based on some feedback we got from last week that people wanted to see us highlighting more Channel 9 content.
That's right. So
but this week on Channel 9 had perhaps deviated a little bit from, it was more like
this week everywhere else by Channel 9. ecosystem. Which, to be honest, that's kind of been our roots. We've always kind of covered everything that's going in the Microsoft developer ecosystem. I guess we just aren't true to the title.
Yes.
Of the, but whatever, we're going to try this. We're going to see what works.
But the comment I was going to say is that there are a few other videos in this series that Charles has posted and will be posting in the next, I believe, next few days. So make sure you go check them out.
Really? That's your big value add?
My value add was giving Charles crap about filming it.
Yeah, no, totally. That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
But if you're in a C++.
You know what that brings us to, Nick?
Oh, my gosh.
It's Picks of the Week!
Picks of the Week! We should do that as like a harmony, like a beautiful barbershop quartet.
Picks of the
Week! Yeah, that's terrible. this is yours. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so this is, I really like this. This is Sahas Kata. I hope this guy gets a job because he went to the trouble.
Oh, what's happened?
Well, no. Let's understand what the story is all about. This is his resume.
Oh.
I don't know what he does now, but he built this really nice Windows Phone 7.
Maybe he makes resumes.
Maybe he does, actually. That could be a really good job. But basically, if you go to his website, you can see that there's a Windows Phone 7, and if you slide it up, you'll actually notice he's got a links off to all of his, you know, resume information, his contact information. You can click to send him an email, and the email form is right within the same type of experience as when you send an email on your Windows Phone. So I just thought this was super cool.
You look very disgruntled in your Pick of the Week image.
Oh, I'm very serious.
Not even serious. You look like you've just been, someone's just wronged you in some capacity.
I've spent the day hanging out with Dan.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. There actually is a version where I'm smiling. I should bring that in.
Okay, well, actually, my Pick of the Week photo, I'm actually bashing up Dan
one to talk.
In a prison setting of some capacity.
Dan doesn't look real there. It kind of looks like a Muppet.
He has a prosthetic broken nose, and I think we colored in one of his teeth to look like he'd been knocked out.
So oh, okay.
It's so, a yeah. Without context,
so
that's
so
a.
So it was a Tuesday, is what you're telling me.
Wednesday, actually.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tuesdays is the anyway. So this is coming back to the Windows 8 blog.
Yes.
blogs.msdn.com/whackb8.
Yes, that's right.
I believe that's the URL.
Yep.
And seriously, those guys are just hammering out content. I think there's a new post. If it's not every day, it's every few days.
Right.
And this was the video, I believe, from yesterday, talking about the improving file management basics, copy, move, rename, and delete. And if, like me, if you're someone that moves a lot of files around on your work network or your home network,
right.
Some really interesting telemetry here about just kind of visualizing how you're moving your transfer speeds, the ability now to kind of pause and start individual transfers, everything's consolidated. It's really cool, so go check out the video. It's like a minute. The video is really quick. I think these features are really cool. I'm getting really excited for Windows 8.
You know, this feature, like, even though you're like, yeah, whatever, you're overhauling copy and paste, I mean, it's really like a big deal for a lot of people because, especially me too, like, you're looking at your file copy and you're like, all right, 3 hours remaining, 4 hours remaining, 4.5 hours, what's going on, right? But this actually shows you that the reason it's 4.5 mile,
4.5 hours.
Hours is because you just opened up Quake and you are now sending a lot of network traffic or whatever.
The other thing too is that seeing the graphs, just seeing a visual representation, allows you to see, well, is my transfer speed climbing ever so slowly? Is it actually declining?
You my catch is set on my Wi-Fi router or whatever.
I'm not sure if there's a particular thing for that. Yeah, one of our phones is ringing.
Yeah, your phone's ringing.
That's really
I think that brings us to the end of the episode.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next
week. You'll see me next week.
We will.
Thanks very much.